Hey, good morning. Good morning. I can't help but make a comment about Mojo. Because I have two grandchildren here, Jude and Avery, and their grandfather is, besides me, you know, they got two. They got another one. Their grandfather's Gary Gaines, who was the coach in the Friday Night Lights days of Odessa Permian. One of the best football coaches that ever coached was Gary Gaines. And when somebody starts talking about Mojo, we take it personal, and because actually their dog is also named Mojo. And so all of that came into my mind as Jeremy was talking about his experience. I've had several experiences, church experiences, at Ratliff Stadium in Odessa myself. Today we also I've already mentioned this, but we're going to do it again and again as long as he's here. We're glad Noah's here playing with the band. And at the end of our service, we're going to have Noah come up and we're going to pray for him all together. We're excited about that too. As I mentioned, my grandchildren are here, two of them. I got six of them. And so my only grandson is here. And I told them as we drove over that we'll have a test on the sermon after. And we have a handout. We're going to have a test. And whoever does the best on the test gets a milkshake from Brahms. So if you don't, so there's a little competition here. There's a reason for taking good notes here. And just wanted all the rest of you to know about that as well. Who knows? One of the things, just thankful for the songs we sang today and also Mike's words at the beginning. And I don't know if it's how long it's done this, but today, let me see that thing in your hand here. We have our bulletin here, and sometimes it says announcements at the top. Sometimes, but today it says family life, which is appropriate for what we're going to talk about today in our sermon and our songs. Today we're going to answer the question. We've been on this series and about why do we do what we do around here. We've talked about baptism. Why do we baptize? We talk about communion. Why do we do that? We do some certain things here that we tell why we do it every Sunday. We have a unity prayer, and we tell really why we do it almost every Sunday that we do it, and which is also good. There's a lot of things that we do, but today we're going to just talk about why do we even show up? Why do we come? Why are we here? And as I was thinking through this, what I wanted to talk about this week and really last week also, I wasn't clear about what to call this sermon. So I called it, Why Do We Meet Together? But that sounded kind of bland. So I changed the word. We're going to say show up. And here's what I want. We're going to do this right now, and we'll do it maybe a few more times. We're going to say some things back and forth to each other. So this side's going to say something that's true, and this side's going to say something we want to be true. I think it's true. I want to make it true. And this side's going to say, oh, we need help. And this side's going to say, we'll show up, right? Okay, so we need help. We'll show up. Here we go. Ready?
We need help. We'll show up.
Isn't that what you're looking for in a friend and in a family member? That when you need help, somebody's going to show up. Some of you have been this way. I think most of us are this way. We're driving down the road and we see someone who's having car trouble on the side, perhaps changing a tire. And in our mind, we're thinking a little battle going on. I don't know if a battle goes on in your mind or not, but in mine, it goes on like, should I stop? And then I tell myself, no, they've probably already got somebody coming. Or I look and see, I think they can handle it by themselves, you know? But when I'm ever in that situation, I'm this way.
I need help.
I need somebody to show up. I just want, even if they don't do anything, I kind of just want to have someone, you know, like watching, right? You know what I mean? Even if they're not helping, just to talk it over. Some of the worst flat tires I've ever had, I happened to have with Avery and Jude's dad helping me. Sometimes it was me helping him, and sometimes it was him helping me. And you know, when you're in town, you know, I've got a flat, I'm going to have some trouble changing. You call for help. I do. I call my son. He does. He calls his dad. Sometimes we need help. And what we do is we show up. This is what we're going to talk about today. Why do we meet together? Why do we show up? And we're going to talk about this verse, and we've mentioned it before from Hebrews, okay? Let's consider, and this is what we've already been doing this today. We've been doing this all day. Let's consider how we can spur one another on to love and good deeds. We're going to love each other. This is what we're doing. This is what Kimberly's doing with the turkeys, right? She has come spurring us on to good deeds. And we're gonna answer the call because, hey, regarding the turkeys,
we need help.
Okay, this is us, right? This is who we are. And we're going to spur one another on to love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together. Sometimes people stop coming. And I'm like, Mike, I don't know how, I need you. I can't stop. I need to be here. It's good to be here, and especially when I have a flat tire and I can call you, or turkeys to deliver, or other things. So don't give up, but encouraging each other. That's why we show up, to encourage each other. We're going to go into that a little deeper. So this not only has to do with why we show up, what we do when we show up, but it's who our identity is. Because I love the church everywhere. Really, I believe in the church, the universal church, everywhere, but I really love ours, you know, because you know why I love ours? Because
I need help. We
do that, don't we? I don't know anybody. Somebody was talking about, I can't go into that. We'll be here too long. Today, we're going to talk about a guy named Dr. Paul Brand. And Paul Brand was a guy who dealt with what's called Hansen's disease, or we probably know it better as leprosy. So this is the part on the test. You know, when Katrina preached last week, we learned so much about the brain. So I thought, man, we need to have a little more educational side of sermons. And so I'm going to talk about Hansen's disease or the idea of leprosy. Paul Brand was a kid who was born in India. His parents were missionaries. When he was 15, they sent him back to London, where they were from, to go to boarding school. He was born in 1914, so it's been a while. And he went to boarding school, then he went to medical school. In medical school, he met his wife, who also became a doctor. He became a surgeon, and then he went back to India. And in 1946, when he went back to India, he began to work with lepers. And he worked with them in India for 20 years, which India is still the country in the world with the most lepers in it, even though the number of lepers has shrunk incredibly, partly to the research that Dr. Brands did. Let me tell you how incredibly. In the 1980s, one of the years through the 1980s, there were about 5 million lepers a year, right? In 2016, in the world, this is globally, in 2016, 170,000. It's quite a decrease, isn't it? Because people have begun to understand the disease, that not only is a disease that affects your body, but it affects your social standing. I want you to think about that. What we're talking about today is not only a disease where it causes lots of pain, but it also makes you a social outcast. And so many of us, I don't think any of us in this room have had leprosy, but some of us have experienced to some degree or another, at some point or another in your life, some kind of social outcast. Well, I know I have anyway, just at home with my three sisters growing up, you know. I was the one, yeah. So anyway, Dr. Brand also wrote a lot of, he came back from India, went to Carville, Louisiana. And Carville, Louisiana is famous because it had the largest and really the last leper colony in the United States. But in 1966, when he came back, that's what lepers did. They went to a place where only lepers lived. That's all they did. Now, leprosy is a skin disease. At least that's what you think it is. That sores begin to come up on your body, and it's a skin disease. And so sometimes you would have another disease. It wasn't even leprosy or Hansen's disease. You'd have something else, but you'd be diagnosed as a leper. This especially happened back even in the days of the Bible. But he worked at Carville, Louisiana, learned a lot of things about leprosy, how to treat it, how to repair people's bodies who had suffered from leprosy. But one of the most important things he learned was, and I'm going to just read this, he was the first physician to appreciate, get this, that leprosy is not a disease of tissue, but of the nerves. It is the loss of the sensation of pain which makes sufferers susceptible to injury, leads to tissue rotting away, especially in the extremities. Here's what would happen if you're a leper. What happens is your nerve endings don't work. And what you do not experience is pain. Now, at first, it comes up as a sore, a boil, like a blister on your skin. But then that kind of goes away a little bit. But what happens, and then you don't have experience pain. And so because you're not experiencing pain in your extremities, the warning sign that pain gives you goes away. So for instance, this, you have a hand and your hand doesn't feel pain. And so you put your hand on a hot burner. Have anybody ever done that? Have any of you ever touched a hot stove? Raise your hand. And what do you do? What does your hand automatically do when you touch a hot stove? Not lepers. Their hand just burns off. But not just that. Heart attacks, strokes, stomach ulcers. All of these kinds of diseases, they don't have pain. It's a nerve problem. And because they don't have pain, that's what the disease spreads. The disease eventually begins to rob them, especially of their extremities. So he wrote some books about this. And this is the weirdest title, and for some of us, this is going to be hard to even hear. One of his books is called Pain, the Gift That No One Wants. And yet, what he discovered was that pain is a warning system, and it's a teacher. We learn from pain. We're taught by pain, and pain often warns us. Pain, he said, has great value. He said the greatest damage of leprosy are the side effects of painlessness. Wouldn't it be great if you could just take some medicine and feel no pain? And yet, no, it wouldn't. You destroy yourself. He said leprosy does damage by destroying nerve endings. And then people damage themselves without pain to warn them. There's no pain signals. It says pain forces us to pay attention to the attacks against our own bodies. And he lists so many of them. But there are different kinds of pain as well, right? There's physical pain, but there's also emotional pain. There's psychological or relational pain. We all have experienced this as well. All pain, some pain is beneficial, some isn't. One of the things that we read in the Bible is that we know that suffering produces perseverance. I want you to think about this idea of suffering has a product. Now, most of the time, I don't want to suffer. If you have a line that says, I want to have either suffering or joy, I want to be in the joy line every time. But there is a product that comes from suffering, that comes from pain. And the product, Paul says in Romans, is perseverance. You learn perseverance because of hard times, because of painful times. And from perseverance, you develop character. I would love to hear stories that Noah could tell us about the pain that he may have suffered in the last few weeks. And yet, there's the growth. Some would say this, there is no formation without pain. There's no growth in character without some kind of suffering or going through hard times or pain. Sometimes pain is a signal that something needs to change, right? Like I need to get my hand off of that burner. Something needs to change. But sometimes it's other things. Sometimes there's things in our lives that pain is a warning signal. It says you need to change your behavior. Have you ever heard of the term being a person being self-destructive? Well, I've been self-destructive. I've done things that have hurt me, that was destroying my life, and it's only through sometimes a warning signal of pain that I came to understand I need to change my ways. This is what happens when we use the term toxic relationship. What needs to happen if you're in a toxic relationship? You need to change that, right? There's some change that needs to be made. Yeah, run. Get away. You know why you know you're in a toxic relationship? Pain. It's causing you pain. And that pain says, ooh, something's wrong with this relationship. It needs to change. Sometimes we need to refocus our energy or our resources. I've been putting energy into this over and over, and I'm getting no positive results. We need to change. Sometimes the way you overcome pain is through endurance. We're going to stick with it, even though things are hard. But here's where I got into the sermon in preparation to this point right here. Pain is not, and I want to say it's not good. It's still not right. It's not our goal. It's not like I want to have pain for the sake of pain. So I had started working on my theology of pain, I call it. And I'm going to call it this. Right? These are some of the points of my theology of pain, okay? So this is where the test may be in the car on the way home, on the way to Brahms, see? So get ready for this. Sometimes pain outstays its welcome, like right off the bat, I would say. But what I'm saying is here, sometimes it outlasts its value. You've learned the lesson, but the pain remains. Yeah, you got that? Sometimes pain over-delivers. Like, I didn't need that much pain to learn that lesson. I learned the lesson, and the pain keeps coming. Sometimes pain is random. In other words, it just comes, and it doesn't have the effect of warning or teaching. It just has the effect of pain. There's no good reason. There's no good product. It's just pain. And so I want to dig into that just a little bit and talk about this idea that when life is painful, our response is presence. And I don't mean presence like Christmas presents, like you're going to open, unwrap, but presence. Or another way to say when life is painful, our response is presence is like this. Yeah, when pain is around, I need presence of some help. So we're going to look at Mark 1. In Mark 1, Jesus comes up. There's several stories of Jesus healing in Mark 1. In all the Gospels, this story is somewhere. But this is how it says it here. A man with leprosy came to him. We're going to get back to Paul Brand in a minute. A man came to Jesus and begged him on his knees, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." Now, one of the things right off the bat that you learned, this guy did not know leprosy protocol. There were rules about leprosy, okay? And so I need somebody to help me here, and let's make it, okay, it's going to be Art, okay? Art, no, yeah, it's going to be Art. Art's a leper, we're going to say. Go ahead and stand up, Art. I need you to stand up here. And first of all, if Art was going to come to church, that's good enough. Don't get too close to Danny. First of all, if Art came in, Steve Box, who's in the back, would not let him come in. Because a leper, we would not let in this room. But if a leper did get close enough to us, he would shout out loud these words, just these words, unclean, and he'd say it a couple of times. So go ahead, Art.
Unclean.
One more. Unclean. There you go. Now you can sit down. You're not the leper. Okay, I want you to think about the emotional, the psychological damage that this does on a person. Their family, their church family that Mike talked about, they don't get to go. They don't even get to get in the parking lot. So this man came up to Jesus. He just walked right up to him, dropped on his knees and said, "Can you heal me?" He didn't know the protocol because he's supposed to stay away and he's supposed to yell, "Unclean, unclean." This guy wanted to be healed. Then it says, Jesus was deeply moved. Now, the word deeply moved here is translated several different ways, but sometimes it means angry. Sometimes it means just frustrated. Sometimes it's a sense in your gut that something is wrong and I don't like it. This is Jesus. Something is wrong and I don't like it. He was deeply moved. And then it says, he reached out his hand and touched the man. In the days of Jesus and all the way through the days of my grandparents, even in my days, you don't touch lepers. Even some people even think today that you can get leprosy from touching leprosy, which you can't. Leprosy is contagious, but not in that way. You don't get leprosy from touching a leper. What? No. But this man came up and Jesus reached out and touched him. So I want to go back to Paul Brand. Paul Brand wrote about his relationship with a man named Sudan in India. Sudan, Dr. Brand wrote, "Sudan showed me his feet, which ended in smooth, rounded stumps instead of toes." This is how leprosy works. It does it mostly on your fingers, your ears, your nose, your feet, your toes. He said, "When I met Paul Brand, it was too late to save my toes, but he gave me shoes that let me walk." He goes on to tell many rejection stories, rejection by classmates, who made fun of him. No, kids don't make fun of kids, do they? He told a story about a bus driver who forcibly threw him out of a public bus, the many employers that refused to hire him despite his talent and training. He talked about hospitals that turned him away, saying, "We don't treat lepers here." The first time they met, he spent the night on the Brand's veranda, which was unheard of at that time, that a leper would get that close to a person who didn't have leprosy. And Sudan said, "I remember the time when Dr. Brand took my infected, bleeding feet in his hands. I had been to many doctors and some had examined my feet, but always from a distance. But Paul and Margaret were the first medical workers who actually dared to touch me. I had nearly forgotten what human touch was like." Why did Jesus touch the man? Jesus did not need to touch the man to heal him. He healed some people who weren't even around him. He said to one family, "Go home. Your daughter who is sick is healed." He didn't have to touch him to heal him. Why did he touch him? Because Jesus knew the real problem was more than the disease of leprosy. Like this leper, there's a lot of humans in your world and in my world. And sometimes it's me who have lived too long without human touch. And I'm not just talking about a physical touch, because sometimes physical touch isn't really the way to touch. Sometimes it's a listening ear. Someone, how long has it been since someone really heard the man? Jesus said, I'm willing, be clean. And at that moment, what happened? The leper was healed, but he was also restored to his community. There was two things that happened to him. He was healed and restored. Now he could come to dinner again. He could sit at the table. He could ride in the car. Wait, they didn't have cars. But if they would have had cars, it could have been. Well, how does this relate to us? First of all, CCC is a place, well, I should say it's not a place where you have to pretend that everything is fine. Can I hear an amen about that? You know, one of the things, I look around the room, and I know we got issues. We got issues. And one of the things we have, our church has a preacher who's got issues. Yeah, we have a band. Yes, thank you, Alan. We have a band, the members of which have issues. Yeah, we have teachers. I've told you, I pray down the list of our online directory, and I see your faces. I pray for you, and I think so much of the time I'm praying for the issues I already know you have, and you know mine, because we're not that kind of people who try and hide our stuff, right? That's not who we are. Why do we come together? Yeah, because we need each other. We need help, so we show up. When our hand touches another person, it's the hand of God that touches that one who is in need. Because after all, right, we're the body of Christ. We're the ears of Christ who listen. We're the hand of Christ who touches. This is who we are. We care, and we demonstrate our care by showing up. So I'm going to tell three stories. They're all personal stories. I would tell your stories, but I don't know you as well as I know me. So these two kids here, their dad, when he was 5 years old, he was a kindergartner. And at his school, they had a little track meet, you know. And at the track meet, there was about 10 or 12 different events. And we came to it and we watched. And they went grade by grade, and you're rotating around, and I'm in the stands, and we're watching Jude and Avery's dad run and throw and jump and stuff. And if you got first, second, or third place, you got a ribbon. You got a blue ribbon, or you got a red ribbon, or you got a white ribbon. And if you didn't get first, second, or third place, you got a purple ribbon. Pretty soon, Glenn had a handful of purple ribbons. And for some kids, that didn't matter too much, but this kid was a competitor. He gets mad at chutes and ladders, you know. He wants to win everything. And so when he had just a handful of purple, he knew that wasn't red, or it wasn't blue, or it wasn't white. So we get to the last event. It's the 50-yard dash. And I'm getting frustrated, too, watching him. And I'm thinking, I want to do anything I can to intervene. I want my kid to feel okay, right? But it ain't going to happen. So we get down, and he's not the slowest kid in the world, but he ain't the fastest either. So they're all down in their stance, right? And on your mark, get set, pow, gun goes off. Everybody takes off except one guy. And about three steps later, Glenn goes. He takes off. And he starts catching up. I think he might make it. And he get to the end of that 50 yards, which seemed like about 1,000 yards to me. He gets there, and the fourth place. And I mean, he's devastated. And so now it's up to me to do something about it. What can you do? Yeah, not that much. Not that much, because he knows the difference between purple and the rest. And so what he does, though, he gets frustrated. We just hug, and we just cry, and we just talk, and we'll get him next year, you know. That's what Odessa Permian saying about Arlington Martin right now. We'll get him next year. But not only that, what I wanted him to know, what I wanted to try to communicate to him more than anything was that I believed in him, right? And isn't this what you want to communicate to the one you love? Because not only are you going to show up, but you're going to show up because those people over there need help. Just look at them. You can tell by looking. They need help. They need help. You're going to help them. And what you want to tell them is, I believe in you. A couple of years before that, my dad, I'd gone to college. I went to ACU. I ended up playing football, but I tried out. I was a walk-on at first. I'd been a quarterback in high school. I wasn't good enough to play quarterback in college. So I was going to try to be a defensive back. And after 3 days, the coaches brought all of the walk-ons in. There were about 50 of us. And they said, you guys can't play. Actually, they said, we don't think you can play. We appreciate your effort. Your guys that are going to, the varsity's coming in tomorrow, they're going to be bigger and stronger and faster and everything. And we don't think you can do it. And we all went back to the dorm, except I didn't because I lived about 3 miles from the dorm, and I went home instead, and I talked to my dad. And that was in 1971. Man, I'm old. In 2002, I wrote this letter to my dad. It was after a certain event, and the speaker called these memories to my mind, and I said, I remember, Dad, the day that Coach Owens told the 60 of us that we were too small, too slow, or just generally not good enough to play with the big boys. We all went back to the dorm where most of the fellows, angry and dejected, made plans to go to other schools or go home until school started in a few weeks. But I drove out to the house and talked to you. I remember three questions and one bit of advice. First, you asked if I thought I could play, and I said yes. And second, you asked if I thought the coaches watched me long enough to know if I could play or couldn't, and I said no. And next, you asked if they said that I couldn't play or that they just suggested that I not play. Actually, they had suggested that playing would be a waste of time and I'd never be good enough. And then you said, well, why don't you just try anyway? So I went back with one other guy, and we tried. The next spring, he had quit, but I was playing. You changed my life that day. Not only did you change my life, but you changed the lives of the people who would come in contact with me for the rest of the years that I played and coached. Most of the people will never know the behind-the-scenes way that because you believed in me, and took the time to listen to me, God used me to change others' lives. Thank you for all of those who don't know this story, but mostly thanks for being a great dad to me. And then there's rehab. As most of you know, my other son went to rehab for alcohol addiction last year. And while he was in rehab, no one could see him. We couldn't talk to him. He got to make one phone call a week, and he called his wife. There was twice that the person who was his supervisor let him have a second call, and he called me. And so he talked to his wife a few times during that 6 weeks he was in rehab. And then he talked to me. So I couldn't touch him. I couldn't hug him. I couldn't talk to him. So what I did is I wrote him letters. And I made copies of the letters because, you know, I knew he wouldn't. So I wrote him letters every day. And these are the letters that I wrote him. And last spring, I was reading through these, and one of them tells me, I wrote like this. Well, I sent a picture of us, me and his brother, when we're skiing one time. I sent a picture of him and his brother when they were little kids playing together. I sent a picture of him and Jude when they were goofing around in the kitchen together. But one of the letters I wrote, tomorrow I'm going to pop the question to Mary Beth. I'm not sure what she'll say. Anyway, it goes on from there. So I touched him. I reached out and touched him. I didn't touch him with my hand, but I let him know that he needed help and I was going to show up, because that's who we are and that's why we come and meet together. So he's coming home, and I couldn't be there when he got home for the homecoming because I was in New York. But his brother was there. This is the Austin airport when my youngest son got off the plane from rehab. And who was there was his wife, his kids, and his brother. Because when we need help, we show up. That's what we do. That's who we are. There's nothing else like human presence which represents the presence of God. This is God's hand reaching out to another person to say, I believe in you. I forgive you. I love you. Presence. Human presence representing the presence of God. So we're going to sing How He Loves. And you guys have this thing with, when life is painful, we show up. That's the last thing. I have this thing with this song because I love the song. Because it speaks to this idea that there is stuff wrong in our life. There's one line, I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about how he loves me. And this is us. And this is what we come to remind each other. This is why we need each other, to remind each other that God loves us. And no matter where we've been, no matter what we've done, no matter what our circumstances is, God is, his love is greater than that. And so we sing this song, How He Loves Us. It's one of the ways we remind each other that God is at work, and God believes in you too. God's at work in everything we do, even in our pain, and maybe especially in our pain. God is at work. And when we show up, the presence of God says to that one, and sometimes you don't need to say anything. You don't need even touch. Sometimes you just need to be in the room. You just need to be present. Just need to be there. And through your presence, God says, I love you. Let's stand up and sing.